With shelter in place keeping us off the roads, what's that mean for EVs and the automotive industry? I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense, where we meet the people that are changing our world with eco-innovations. This week, we explore transportation with our longtime correspondent, Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Tom, welcome back to Green Sense.
Well, thanks for having me.
You've been keeping busy during this shelter in place order?
Yeah, the beauty of working in a digital format is that life hasn't really changed that much here at Consumer Guide Automotive. No one's really at the office, but we can do about the same amount of work remotely. And actually, no one shows up at my office door, so I'm slightly more productive than normal.
I think that's true. I think you'll find that lots of us are even working harder these days. Well, for many of us, sheltering in place is a challenge, and we want to get out. And one of the few things we can still do out there is drive, which can be very relaxing these days. And one of the great things about driving these days is that you can continue to keep your social distance, but gas is really cheap. Tom, how long is cheap gas going to last?
That's a really good question, and it may not last that long. The aberration that we saw recently where crude actually went to a negative price was simply a response to overproduction. As oil producers recalibrate to reduce demand, I think that they can probably reduce demand to the point where we see gas prices where we expect them, which is in the closer to $3, $3.50 range.
I read recently that Saudi Arabia sent a number of super tankers. I think they had around 20 million barrels of oil priced at $10 a barrel, and they hit our shores recently. What's that going to do to keeping oil prices down?
I think in the short term, we're going to still see the cheap gas, and this is entirely based on anecdotal evidence, but it seems to me that we're actually driving a little bit less each week we go into this quarantine. I think people are getting used to being at home and used to ordering things online. So until things start to open up again, prices may slip a little bit more. And yeah, if there's a bunch of new oil coming into the system that we don't really need, that will drive prices further down.
So that begs the question, where can I get an underground storage tank to store this cheap gas? So I'm not paying $3 or $5 a gallon when it goes up.
Yeah, the suggestion has been to build a swimming pool, which will pay for itself if you fill it with petroleum now.
Well, going down memory lane, here's another issue. I remember when we first talked about the Chevy Volt, and it was such big news, and now they're on to the Chevy Bolt, and you recently drove the 2020 version of the EV. Tell us all about it, what you liked, what you didn't, and where it's going.
Yeah, the Bolt is sort of the stalwart electric vehicle out there right now. It's not as exciting as any of the Tesla products, but it's a little bit more capable than some of the other ones out there, and its range was recently bumped over 260 miles, and it's a completely likable vehicle. I think that if you can get past the fact that you have to charge the vehicle every 260 miles, and that's a psychological barrier for a lot of people, they're used to being able to fill up immediately. This is an incredibly practical vehicle. It is roomy, it is fun to drive. It's not exactly quiet, and it's not exactly opulently finished, but it works. And it's an excellent example of the electric vehicles coming down the line.
The Tesla is so much fun to drive because it's so fast. I almost get vertigo when it takes off at that 2.7 time from 0 to 60. How quick is the Bolt?
I think the Bolt does 60 in just a little under 8 seconds, and that's actually regulated. It could be quicker, but I think they regulate it just to preserve the drivetrain and battery.
What about
it's plenty quick.
Oh, it is. And what about the sticker price?
The Bolt starts right around 30. What is it? Right around 37 in LT, and then there's Premier, which goes, 43, something like that.
And that's
before tax credit.
Any rebates available on that?
There are periodically regional rebates. The federal tax credits are gone, but there may still be regional credits that apply. And if you build the vehicle at the Chevy website, it'll tell you what rebates to look for in
so
your
that-
area.
Very competitively priced compared to the Teslas, which are almost twice as much. So how is the consumer liking that?
Yeah, I think just fine. What were sales last year? Right around 15,000 units, I think. They were a little bit disappointing. They kind of sell themselves. I don't think Chevy is trying that hard to sell too many of them because the tax credit is gone now. And there's a bunch of other vehicles out there like that car that you should absolutely cross drive, test drive, with the Kia Niro EV, the Hyundai Ioniq, for example, and the Nissan Leaf, also very similar vehicles. All of them still have federal tax credits.
And are they getting the 260 miles to the charge?
The Chevy is the best. It's the best overall. What is the Leaf? The Leaf comes in around 225, and I think the Hyundai and the Kia come in right around 239.
And Tom, what happened to the Volt?
The Volt was the most misunderstood vehicle, I think, in the history of General Motors products. I think there was like the Chevrolet Corvair and then the Chevrolet Volt. But plug-in hybrid just really never made sense to the public. And I don't think that General Motors ever did an especially good job of making sense of what that was to the buying public. And it worked for the people who owned them. They loved them. And I knew several Volt owners who swore by them and used no electricity during the week and then could drive as far as they wanted to on the weekend. But sadly, that just never made sense to the public. The whole idea of a plug-in short-term electric vehicle was hard to convey, which is interesting because we're going to see a lot more of them in Europe coming from German manufacturers.
Interesting. Well, let's switch topics. You know, one of the biggest costs for the Army is fuel to run its tanks, planes, and automobiles, and also the challenge and the risk to get that fuel to the front lines in times of battle. And now I see that there's some news out there that the U.S. Army is considering EVs and other alternative fuel vehicles, according to a recent press release they sent out. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, the Army stuff's really interesting, too. One of the things that the Army's doing, you'd mentioned fuel and the danger and cost of shipping fuel. Another thing, too, is visibility in infrared. And a vehicle that runs more coolly or more quietly won't be visible, especially at night. And one of the things that they're working on is fuel cell vehicles. It works really well if you can bring the charging with you.
Yeah, well, long extension cord, huh?
Well, that's the problem. You literally need that extension cord. And that extension cord generally comes in the form of a very large truck with a very large generator on it. And that is not a very stealthy thing, and it's a little bit expensive, and it has to be brought around, and that does operate on fuel. So it can in fact, charge a lot of vehicles very quickly, but it is a logistical issue that needs to be dealt with.
Why now? Why is the Army considering this when EVs have been around a long time and they could have started this investigation a long time ago?
That's a good question. And there's a lot of things that go for EV in terms of reliability and simplicity and maintenance. I think that under stressful situations, EVs will probably be a little bit more durable. There is, again, not the danger of a fuel cell or a fuel tank being pierced or breached. So there are things going for this. Additionally, electric vehicles produce insane amount of torque. So if you're talking about something like a tank or a heavy truck, it might do better in an unpleasant off-road experience than might a gas engine or a diesel engine.
Do you see any eventual trickle down to the civilian market if the Army uses more EVs? Will that help boost sales? And is there any technology that they may develop that we may find quite advantageous?
Battery development or reduces the cost of the amortized cost of producing batteries is good. So that's nice. I think that ultimately this just speeds up development of EVs in general.
So here's another one. I think I'm pronouncing this correct. Polestar, an EV company affiliated with Volvo. They've got some. Tell us about the news that they have and what will set their EVs, what will make their EVs unique from others' offerings.
Yeah, Polestar is interesting. Polestar is a brand new brand for Volvo, and it's a spin-off brand. They had used it and applied it to high-performance versions of their production vehicles under the Volvo name. And there was last a version of the Volvo S60 sedan dubbed Polestar, which was in fact a plug-in hybrid and very high performance and very cool. But now Polestar is a separate division of Volvo. The Polestar 1 was a sports sedan, or really a sports coupe, that was delivered last year, the year before, something like that. And now the Polestar 2, which is a little bit higher volume, will be a pure electric compact crossover. So this will be Volvo's first pure electric vehicle retailed in the United States. And will be pure electric. The Polestar brand will be retailed through Volvo dealers. It's not that distinct. but it is a brand new name for them. And it's out there to sort of get your attention away from Byton and Rivian and all the other EV makers, upstart EV makers trying to make news.
What are the specs on the Polestar, 0 to 60 and price point?
I think the price point on this thing is right around $80,000. I don't know 0 to 60 offhand, but I think it's about 400 horsepower.
Wow. It sounds like it's a competition with the Tesla.
Yeah, that's what everyone is shooting for. It's to distract people from Tesla. And Volvo might have a shot at this. It's a good-looking vehicle.
Tom, with all the talk and interest for EV pickup trucks and the coronavirus putting a slowdown on things, where do we stand and when are we going to start seeing some of those cool EV pickup trucks hit the market?
That's a really good question because we had a bunch of them on the way. General Motors had converted one of its factories, its Hamtramck factory, to building electric vehicles. And, of course, that stalled at the moment. An all-electric Ford F-150 was due soon. And, of course, Rivian was supposed to show us the production version of the R1T later this year. And we're not going to see that either. And we don't know what's up with the Tesla Cybertruck, which was also due this year. I think they're all largely ready to go. The technology was there, and manufacturers knew how to build them. The question was more about packaging and how to put together a vehicle that the public wants. One of the interesting things about these vehicles, and we know this from Tesla, is that the early buyers are probably not going to be pure regular pickup truck buyers, but early adopters. That's fine if it's volume and if it gets the word out, but that product that we see first will probably be a little bit different than when the general public embraces an electric pickup.
Well, we're all waiting for those, and Americans love their pickup trucks. This last story starts on some high news, but ends on maybe some low news, is the new Chevy Corvette. It's just an excellent example of how American car companies can be competitive with those Italian supercars. The new Chevy Corvette is one of the real values out there. However, you've got a recent posting on ConsumerGuideAutomotive.com that says the unintentionally rare virus vets. What's that all about?
Yes. Yes, the brand new Corvette, it was new for 2020, super exciting vehicle. And as you mentioned, just great innovation. Somehow General Motors and Chevrolet managed to build a mid-engine sports car that is seriously competitive and price it under $60,000 starting. It's
unbelievable.
It's an amazing story. It's such a great thing. And, you know, it kind of makes you want to wave a flag. It's so cool. And now the factory is shut down. About 2,700 examples were built for 2020, and we don't know when that factory is going to start up again. And the problem with starting up these factories is that their whole supply chain has been shut down. So it's not like a switch can be flipped and they can start building cars in a week or 2 weeks. This whole thing's going to take a long time to ramp up. So what is very likely is that 2020 will be the year of an extremely rare Corvette, probably only 2,700 examples, which we are officially dubbing the virus vet.
Yeah, why did they shut down the plant? Was it because people got the coronavirus or was it a proactive move?
Oh, I'm pretty sure that was a proactive move in this case. There were a number of cases of coronavirus across U.S. manufacturing, across automotive manufacturing, but I don't think there were any at the Corvette factory. I think that shutdown was just part of the broader shutdown overall.
Well, Tom, if you're one of the lucky ones to get to test drive one of those 2,700 Corvettes, will you come by and pick me up?
I will, and here's the thing. I haven't gotten my hands on one yet either, so... And I don't think they're passing them around at the moment. So, yeah, there's the downside of this story. It's all about me.
Well, Tom, as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for having us on the show. And, hey, thank you for having me on your podcast.
Oh, it was awesome. If anyone's looking for it, that was episode 28 of the Car Stuff Podcast.
That's Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Read his articles, reviews, and more at ConsumerGuide.com and check out his podcast, Car Stuff. I'm Robert Colangelo. This is GreenSense. You can subscribe to our podcast at GreenSenseFarms.com. And be sure to listen for the GreenSense Minute every Thursday on News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM, WBBM Chicago.